My name is Daniel Shoptaw, an Arkansas accountant with a love for the Cardinals. I spent a lot of years watching the game before deciding to write about it. Now I express my thoughts and opinions at C70 at the Bat, part of the Cardinal Conclave. His name is Dan Buffa, a former Busch Stadium scoreboard operator with a passion for the game. His writing talents can be found throughout the internet on a variety of topics, including movies and anything St. Louis. You'll find him often bleeding out words at stlouissportsminute.com. Every week, we pool our knowledge and our opinions to create this podcast. Together, we are the best Dans in baseball. Welcome in to episode 31 of Best Dans in Baseball. We're doing this on... Well, I'm Daniel Shoptaw, that's Dan Buffett. You know that much by now. we're doing this Friday night. This is the 22nd of April. The Cardinals are just taking the field against the Padres. It's one of those late-night shows, or late-night shows on Fox Sports Midwest. You get those every once in a while during the year. So we'll kind of keep a little bit of an eye on that. Won't talk too much about the game, hopefully, because it won't really mean much to you by the time you hear this show. Dan, I guess, I mean, the biggest place to start is obviously the series that the Cardinals just finished up with the Cubs. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday this week. You know, this was the first time the Cardinals had a chance to see the Cubs this season. Didn't go exactly the way you would like it to go, given the way that the Cubs are starting to rampage through the division. You know, and Arrieta throws a no-hitter last night. They win again today. They're 13-4. Is there cause for concern over that series, or is it still too early to really get worried?
I think it's really too early. I mean, I think it's a good measuring stick for the team's at that we – have faced a couple good teams and we haven't fared that well against them. And I think that, you know, if they have a really good April and we have a good September, I think we'll be fine. But I do think that that series opened up a lot of eyes because, you know, we actually were able to miss Arrieta and Lester, and we still lost 2 out of 3. But I think, I mean, there are aspects of the series that we did well in, and it's easy to kind of get a little bothered by it, and because you have the Cardinals beating up on bad teams, which hopefully we'll do good tonight. We'll beat the Padres around, and we slapped around the air division guys. When you face the Cubs, and you know, the Lackey game was kind of disheartening, and you know, the next game against Hamill wasn't that much better. Then we escape with a game. I mean, you want to get worried, and then part of you kind of wants to go, it's only April. I mean, we face these guys again, and this happens again. I mean, it's just kind of like a measuring stick. When you face these two teams, you face the Pirates and you face the Cubs, and the first two times have showed that they have some better pitching, they have more timely hitting. And but as much as I want to get, I mean, I got a little worried after the, you know, after the first game, and then the second game happened, and I just kind of remember that it's just April, it's a long season. I think there's concerns, but I think we know where we're at, and we know what we have to do. I think it's more of take care of business against everybody else and get ready to face them again. I think a lot of things kind of went their way. I mean, we all know Lackey likes to pitch at Busch. I kind of knew he was going to pitch good. I didn't think he was going to turn into like Nolan Ryan 20 years ago, but he kind of did that. But, I mean, I think it's fair to get kind of concerned, but it's a little bit too early to get really too panicked about a team having a good April. But if you think about it, what if the Cardinals are having a really good April and the Cubs are looking really bad? I'm sure we'll be like, well, let's not hold them off yet. There's still a lot of baseball left. So you got to flip it around and just know that there's still a lot of series left between these two teams, and hopefully the next one doesn't go like the last one.
Yeah, you hope so. The Cardinals don't play. They play the Cubs again into May, 23rd, 24th, 25th in Busch. Don't go up to Wrigley until looks like middle of June. Yeah, I guess, I mean, it is early. I think that, you know, you were saying if the Cardinals had a good month and the Cubs didn't, we would be, you know, having a little bit of a different mindset. But on the flip side of that, the Cardinals, you know, the Cubs were supposed to be good, and they are good. And the Cardinals were supposed to struggle. I mean, we're kind of playing out what we thought we were going to see.
All of our fears are kind of coming out to be somewhat true, but you know, if they catch a losing streak and we catch a winning streak, then the records are not too far off. It just, It just comes down to which team can just put together that streak, and the Cubs are just doing it, and you don't want them to see them. I mean, it's a good measure. I always think the good measuring stick for every team is at the end of May. 2 full months of play. You've played a lot of different teams. You've gotten a lot of different schedule. So I think if the Cardinals are still kind of – I mean, if the Cubs start to grow this lead in the next 20 to 25 to 30 days, then we can really get alarmed, because you don't want to bury yourselves like 10 to 12 games out of the first base, even in on June 1st. You don't want to be that far out, because this team is not going to go on that kind of swan dive. What the Cardinals have to do is just stay, you know, above 500, stay level, and just, you know, keep coming at them. And hopefully next time you just play better. I mean, Pittsburgh, you know, we should have taken one of those games. So preferably the bullpen doesn't cough up that middle game. You're looking at a couple series loss, but you're not. And you're looking at 5 out of 6 loss. So it's easy to get a little worried, alarmed and worried, and then kind of pushing it to really true concern. I'm not at the true concern yet, but worried. Yeah. I mean, you got the Cubs. You look at a guy like Anthony Rizzo. He's only hit 184, but he's got 6 home runs and he's got 17 RBIs. Lester and Arrieta are as good as ever. And, you know, they're hitting, and they lost, you know, they lost one of their big bats in Kyle Schwarber, and they're just moving right on. But you just kind of think that, as I said earlier, you kind of put yourself in the mindset of the Cardinals were in that kind of seat. You kind of want to be looking over your shoulder and going, okay, we're 13-4, but, you know, the other team, they're not going to stay down for too long. And I think the Cardinals, you know, they've gotten this far with, you know, Adam Wainwright having some bad struggles and half their pitching staff not really pitching the way that they should, and their bats kind of being up and down. I think that we still have some time to turn around. But then again, if the weeks keep going by and we're talking about, you know, 500 or lower, and the Cubs are just streaming away, then you get really concerned.
The Cardinals sit 4 games out before this battle here with the Padres. If they win tonight, they'll be 3.5. You know, you do think back to 2010, where the Cardinals had a 5-game lead at the end of April over the Reds, and it looked like, you know, this team was going to run away with it, because especially since they were the favorite, this was a team that was going to be good. And we know that, you know, the Reds came back and Reds actually won that division. We all remember, you know, the brawl and all that stuff, but later on in the year. But anyway, yeah, I mean, it is, you don't want to get too far back. You're right. And you definitely don't want to get, you know, double digits or anything like that. But it takes some work to do that, too. I mean, the Nationals are playing as good as the Cubs. The Braves are as bad as anybody. And right now they're 7.5 games. I mean, there's just not enough games to get double digits back, thankfully. So we will have to keep an eye out, but it is a little concerning. And like you say, it's concerning that the Cubs are winning with pitching, because we expected that to be the Cardinals' mindset, and the Cubs would win with offense. And so I think right now, if they were slugging the ball and they were just bashing everybody, you'd say, okay, well, you know, it's going to catch up with them. But right now, they're winning with pitching, and the hitting hasn't even really come around. You know, like I said.
Yeah, I mean, it's Jason, yeah. I mean, yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
I mean, Jason Hayward and Anthony Rizzo, like you were saying, both under 200. I think even at the end of the Cardinals series, now the slugfest that they had yesterday and today in Cincinnati probably changed things. I haven't looked, but you know, people like that. There's nobody just tearing the cover off the ball, but. You know, we said going into the year, Jake Arrieta can't be as good as he was down the stretch last year. Well, so far he has been. Another no-hitter. and, you know, John Lackey has pitched better. I think that's going to catch up with him eventually. John Lester's pitched a little bit better. You know, I think that they're overachieving on the pitching side of things maybe a little bit right now. But their offense isn't kicking in, so even if they start to come down to earth on pitching, probably going to start hitting.
Yeah, I mean, and right now, I mean, they're leading the National League in ERA. They're right up there in strikeouts. They're average against, and you know, the Cardinals, what we thought their strength was going to be is pitching. They're about middle of the major leagues in pitching as far as a lot of categories. But in hitting, the Cardinals are, you know, they're leading the league they're second in OPS. They're in the top 5 and slugging an average and on base percentage. So it's like this season is like it's playing out the way we thought. But not when it comes to the Cardinals and what they're really doing well. It's not. I mean, they're hitting really well overall, and they're pitching just okay. But the problem with the Cardinals is that they're last in fielding. I mean, their fielding percentage is just terrible. And that's really kind of hindering them, is that you see a lot of these games that are, if they are close, you see the defense just kind of crumble. And, you know, guys are making errors, and they're kind of, you know, it kind of looks like a mess a lot of games. Now, you know, that can straighten itself out, you hope. But, I mean, it's just, you know, the pitching, I think, is going to kind of rise a little bit into the top 10. I think the pitching's going to be more closer to the Cubs when it gets into the middle of the season. The bats, you know, we have no idea what they're going to do. But, I mean, they're doing their job right now. But the fielding is what you look at. If you want to look at stats, the fielding of the Cardinals has just kind of been really erratic.
Yeah, I mean, that's really, you're right. That's the key. I mean, there's been a number of games. Well, you know, that game against Pittsburgh, that kind of turned on the Diaz there. The game against the Cubs earlier on, the first game, even though the Cubs were already ahead, kind of blew open with a Diaz error. You know, and I don't want to focus just on that. Those are just a couple that I remember, but there have been some times where things have not been good. And, you know, this pitching staff's got to have confidence that the outs are going to be made. And when they're not, I mean, every once in a while it's going to happen, but when it becomes a regular occurrence, it's a little scary. And, you know, there's really not much else the Cardinals can do about it, unfortunately, because they've got to play who they've got, and there's nobody, you know, it's not like there's a Pete Cosmo on the bench that can't hit but can field like crazy. You know, Tejada and Diaz are pretty close to the same. Tejada's got more experience, but neither one of them are defensive wizards. And then you look at some of the other errors that have been made in the infield. It's just it's a little scary. Now, like you say, Cardinals could have won that game against Pittsburgh, easily could have won 2 out of 3 against the Cubs with a little bit more offense. I mean, the second game turned on a base hit by the pitcher. The Cubs, you know, if he gets Hamill out in that at bat, if Jaime Garcia gets him out there, you know, who knows, maybe they win a 1-0 game. And I think we feel much better. So it's not that the Cubs are just, you know, leaps and bounds ahead of the Cardinals, but it's just enough right now that could be the difference. And if it's anybody but the Cubs, we'd be able to handle it, I think, a little bit better than we can with them doing well.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the fact that it's front and center for the Cardinals. I mean, you can't escape what's going on right now. It isn't like the Cardinals haven't faced the Cubs, and we're just having these struggles against other teams, and we're 8-7, and we're fine. You faced, you know, Pittsburgh in PNC, and you've been exposed entirely. So, and then you go, you get the Cubs at home, and you just kind of get, I mean, the first game, you have Hayward diving and making catches, Lackey's throwing a gem, they're getting these timely hits. The Cardinals' bats just kind of went frozen after really just destroying teams for the last previous 9 games. I mean, you think about it from podcast to podcast, we're thinking, okay, well, let's just hope that, you know, the next 9 games they do really well. Well, they did. And then they come into the Cubs, and we're hoping they keep that going, and then they just get shut down. And, you know, they win the last game, which was great. You don't want to get swept. And it's hard to really know where the Cardinals are now down 1-0.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's just more that you have 2 teams in your division now that are going to constantly push you. And as I said, it's going to be a measuring stick. Every time you face these teams, you know, I think we're going to face the Pirates next here in May. That's going to be another measuring stick. I mean, okay, we got swept by them the first time. Now, how have we improved pitching, offense, defense? How can we improve when we face them again? I mean, you want to win that series. You want to improve, because now that we've shown that we can beat the bad teams for the most part, I mean, you know, we can handle the Reds, the Brewers, the Braves, hopefully handle the Padres, handle the teams that are going to be under 500 by the end of the year. Because if the Cardinals, I mean, you cannot go in against the Pittsburgh Pirates and eventually against the Cubs again, especially if you're still hanging around 500. You can't get slapped around again. You have to improve. I mean, okay, beginning of the season, everybody feared that the Cardinals wouldn't be as good as these 2 teams, especially the Cubs. Well, the first time against the Cubs and the Pirates, they weren't. It just depends on how they improve in between the next matchup. When they face these teams again, you have to play better. Because if you get, you know, if we face the Cubs again and we play flat, lose 2 out of 3, it's just, you got to show some improvement against these teams that are going to be standing in your way of not just getting into this, not winning the Central, but getting into the playoffs. period, because the wild card game, the way it's shaping up, is probably going to come out. It could be come out whoever doesn't win the division in the Central. Those two teams could be playing again for the wild card game. So you're not going to escape these two teams. You're going to have to play better against them.
Yeah, and the simple fact is the Cardinals scored 7 runs against the Pirates and 6 runs against the Cubs.
Yeah, that's
And they scored 13 runs in a game against the Reds. I mean, it's just so. I mean, the bats have to be able to hit solid pitching, and so far they haven't shown that. Well, again, we'll see. I think we got a lot of excitement out of beating up on the Braves and the Brewers and the bats
work. We just don't know if they're going to work against the big teams.
Yeah, and that's it's going to be interesting. And then, we even get a test. Right now the Cardinals will play Padres right now. A series. It's pretty bad if they lose this one because the Padres are one of those weaker teams. You go out to Arizona where the ball has been flying, from what I understand. They're still going to run into Zach Greinke, probably. Maybe not Shelby Miller. It looks like there may be some issues there. But, it's still not necessarily a series that you expect to be pitched out of. But then you run into the Nationals when the Cardinals come back to town at the end of this month. And that could be a real big key, too. I mean, that's a test. It's not a divisional rival, but the Nationals are looking like a team that's going to be a playoff contender, and you'd like to be able to hang with them. So, again, you're right. You can't wait till kind of the end of May, but you really want to see some improvements all on the way. And so far, it's hard to say that we have. Now, let's shift a little bit, because we've talked about how the pitching staff, for the most part, has not been too bad. We've seen some really good stuff out of Jaime Garcia. Carlos Martinez has looked good. Michael Walker hasn't been too bad. Leak has been kind of iffy. But then you get Adam Wainwright. And, like I said, Adam Wainwright tonight, second batter against the Padres in a pitcher's ballpark, in a team that, I mean, granted, Will Myers has already got 4 homers on the year, so he's got some pop, obviously.
Yeah.
But still, given as much trouble as we've seen out of Wainwright so far, this is not exactly the start we wanted.
No, I mean, it was Anna Wainwright, and I broke it down for KSTK earlier this week that he's usually a quick starter. I mean, he's usually like nails in April and May. I mean, if he has his problem, it's when he kind of has that little dead arm phase in the middle of the season in August, September. But we've never seen this Anna Wainwright that has had this many struggles to begin a season. Usually when he starts a season, and, you can say every season's different, but, when it comes to a guy that you look to as an ace, maybe that's not going to be changed by the end of the year, but he's still an ace. The last time he was fully healthy in a season, 2014, he was an ace, and he pitched like one. And you expect that from him, because while Carlos Martinez has been very impressive, he's not the ace yet. I mean, he's a guy that's probably your number two and ascending towards the ace, but you got to have Waino pitch like Waino. Because if you don't, if Waino get tonight, if he goes into his 4th start tonight in San Diego and cannot handle the San Diego Padres in that parking lot, and Petco, you got to get legitimately concerned. I mean, after 3 bad starts where he's blown leads to a couple bad teams. I mean, the Cardinals, really, the offense has supplied Wainwright with enough to be like at least 2-1. He lost the game in the opener against Lariano, which was, Pittsburgh PNC, tough, offense wasn't scoring. But then, you get like a 4-1 lead, and Drew Stubbs hits the home run, and then you get, a 4-0 lead. You're thinking, man, 4-0 against a bad team. Wainwright's going to go 7. He's going to, strike out 6, scatter like 5 singles, and it didn't happen. He couldn't hold it. He's just very hittable. What I've seen with Wainwright is his fastball, it's the same miles per hour. He's just not putting it where it needs to go, and it's very flat, and he's throwing his curve a ton. And it's getting hit. He's just more hittable. This is not the Wainwright we're used to. And you can say it's going to get better, but as I said, we haven't seen this kind of Wainwright in April. We haven't seen this kind of – usually he comes out of the gate and he's locked down, especially since he's kind of gotten, a couple easy teams. This is his 3rd start against a weak team in a row. And if he goes out tonight, I mean, if he allows more than 3 earned runs, you got to be alarmed.
Probably so. Yeah. And again, he got out of the first. He just gave up the home run, so maybe it's not a big deal. You know, bad pitch, whatever. But it is a little concerning. We were talking on the Slack app today, and Bill Ivey from I-70 Baseball pointed out his feeling was Wainwright was just getting pummeled on first pitches, people knowing that he's going to throw strikes. You know, back, you know, a couple years ago when he basically stopped walking people or trying to walk people, you know, and now they're getting on him for strikes. And so, and then he gets tentative because we saw he's walked, you know, before tonight, 9 batters, I think, in his first 3 starts, and he's only struck out 8. I mean, that makes you worried as well. I mean, you don't look at it as an injury thing or anything like that, but given that he came back so strong at the end of last year, you don't really want to mark it down to rust for missing a year either.
Yeah, you don't, because you think that he just have a, you know, what I took away from last year was, hey, your right arm just got almost a whole year off. I mean, for a guy that I think in the 2 years before that, he threw a bunch of innings, playoffs and regular season, you know, over 220, I think, each year. Okay, you got a whole year off from April, you know, late April to, you know, those innings at the end of the season, which were great. You know, he was this close to almost starting a game against the Cubs in the playoffs. He was pretty close if he could have gotten a little bit more mileage in the regular season. But, yeah, you thought, okay, now he's going to come into 2016 and just be – he's going to be Wainwright, and he hasn't been. And it's like he hasn't even been near that ace. The first start against the Pirates was actually not that bad. It was 6 innings, I think 3 runs. You know, he looked okay. His stuff had more bite on it. His pitches had better finish. But then the last 2 starts against bad teams, and you're thinking, you know, yeah, they're jumping on the first pitch. He can't, you know, get out of the third time through the order. Because even his last start out where he pitched well in the beginning, he just ended up getting pummeled. And you know, they probably left him out there and more 1 inning too long. So, and Wainwright's really, I mean, like I said, he's still the ace of your staff. I think I said it before. I still think Waka's a number 4 on this staff. I think if a healthy Garcia is out there, I think he's a better pitcher. I mean, he doesn't have to worry about where his fastball is going. So you have Wainwright, Martinez, and then you have Garcia, and then Waka and Leake. And Leake showed a lot of improvement in his last start, maybe even deserved the win against the Cubs. But, yeah, Wainwright, he just hasn't shown any improvement. His starts have gotten worse. And, you know, you want to see him go out there tonight and just do something. I mean, produce a good start. Produce a quality start. You know, that'd be getting back to what you did in your first start of the year. And then, you know, that takes you in, you know, to the next start against, you know, the D-backs. He's going to get 2 starts on this road trip. You got to see some good things from your ace, because he still is expected to be the ace of this staff. Is that going to be the same thing on September 25th? Maybe not. But right now, he's expected to do that. And if you want to look at a reason, one of the reasons why the Cardinals are in the middle of the pack is because you got your ace getting slapped around and hammered. And that just can't happen, especially against bad teams, teams that he should be known that he's handled in the past.
Yeah, I would hope so. We'll find out. It is, but like you say, it's just really disturbing to see Wainwright struggle like this. And again, he's getting older and things of that nature. But on the flip side, he has, you know, should have a fairly rested arm. So
yeah.
Tonight is a key outing, like you say. If he gives up 3 or 4 runs here, it doesn't go past, you know, 6 innings. Then you start thinking, hey, you know, because the Padres are not a team that's, I mean, they're doing better. Obviously we remember the beginning of the year when they got shut out for the first 3 games against the Dodgers and were hitting like 100 after that series. But,
I mean, they're pretty much in the middle
of the pack now. So
yeah, I mean, they got Myers and Kemp and, you know, not really much. I mean, Upton Jr. is hitting 283, but you don't see a lot of threats on their team. I mean, if a broken down Matt Kemp is your threat, then I think you should be able to carve through him if you're an ace. You got John Jay leading off hitting 277. You look down their lineup, and they don't have anybody hitting over 300. So you think, okay, this is Wainwright trying to get some rehab tonight. You know, this is, and in this ballpark, I mean, this is a tailor-made night for him to get right.
On the flip side of things, it could be worse. I mean, the Cardinals could have actually gotten David Price, who has struggled just as badly. you know, Price has struggled. You know, Verlander, I think, has struggled. Zach Greinke has struggled. You know, Shelby Miller has been, I'm not 100% sure he's not hurt. You know, things of that nature. So it's not like Wainwright's the only guy that's going through something.
No.
But
not at all.
Unfortunately, he's our guy, and so that's the one we're going to focus on. You know, that being said, you know, we have seen some really good stuff out of Garcia and Martinez. You know, those are really, right now, the 1-2, even though they're pitching in the 4-5 spot.
Yeah.
And those guys have been fun to watch so far.
Yeah, and even right now when I'm watching Wainwright on MLB Game Day, as I'm missing the office right now, I'm trying to watch all of his pitch sequences. Like he starts the guy out with a sinker down low. So maybe he's kind of getting that I can't just, you know, put a groove of fastball over the plate. He's actually started this guy Norris off with two sinkers and cutters away. So hopefully he's kind of starting to maybe not just kind of go for that first pitch strike.
Hopefully. And, you know, he's already, you know, he's starting off pretty well right now. So,
yeah.
You know, and like I said, if you just have that one error or that one home run, you know, you make it move on. But we're still a little concerned. And heck, you know, this offense, as we've seen, can be explosive. But, you know, one run could also be all that, you know, all the Padres need, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, it really does. I mean, you have to go down there and you have to hit off Cash. Cashner hasn't had a good start to the season, so you really have no excuse but just to kind of slap him around a little bit. So, I mean, you want to see the bats get back to what they're doing. I mean, okay, we know you're going to have problems against the Cubs and the Pirates. You got to keep beating up these teams that are basically just kind of sitting there going, hey, we're going to act like we're going to play baseball, but you should beat us. And it's simply what they're saying, and they're there to kind of spoil it a little bit, but you need to get in there, score some runs, give your ace a shot. You know, I mean, this is kind of like a, you know, after the bruising against the Pirates, you kind of got to face 9 games of kind of weak teams. Now you're going to get, you know, the Padres and the D-backs, you know, are not pushovers. I mean, the D-backs aren't pushovers by any means. And then you get the Nationals, and then everything kind of starts to get kind of hot again. You get the Nationals, and then you get the Phillies, and then you got the Pirates, and then you got Mr. Poole. I almost didn't even really realize that on May 10th, we're going to be facing Mr. Pujols.
Yeah, they still haven't brought the Angels into St. Louis. And
I don't – okay, do you know why they haven't done that? I mean, you got to think, this is probably one of the best baseball players of our era, easily. And he made that living here in St. Louis. It just – MLB scheduling is not as bad as NHL scheduling in the playoffs right now, which everybody's really launching on them for a good reason, putting Blues games on like 8:45 at night. But, you know, the MLB schedules, the regular season, you would think they wouldn't have gotten Pujols into St. Louis by now.
Well, I mean, you know, they do have pattern, they have the rotation pattern, so you're only going to play LA, you know, every 3 years or so that anyway. You know, and I'm sure it has something to do. I mean, all the different factors when you're only doing that, you know, what everybody's home dates and things, the way it just works out. I don't think it's been any conscious effort to keep him out of St. Louis. I don't think there's been any effort to put him in St. Louis either. Don't get me wrong. I just think it's just kind of one of the things that make the schedule out, and they don't really think much about it. I think it's been a good thing that it's taken this long, though, because if Albert had come back in the year after, it would not have been a very positive reception. I think now that it's going to be, well, it's been what, 4 years? Working on 5 years. About halfway through that contract already, and it's going to be another 2 or 3 before he comes in, assuming he stays with LA through that whole time. You know, by then, I think a lot of the bad feelings have faded, and so he's going to get a much better reception than he would have. So it works in the Cardinals' favor. It is interesting that they'll see him again. You know, it's just something to look forward to. But let's see. Trying to think. I think I had a train of thought at one time, but I don't know what it was.
Hey, it happens. It gets lost, and that's why we got two Dans and not one.
So that's right.
We'll, one of us has to have a train of thought.
That's right. Okay, so I think it was this week. I don't think it was after. I'm pretty sure it wasn't. It was after our last show. The Cardinals activated Ruben Tejada and sent down Greg Garcia. Now, Greg Garcia obviously was having a good start to the season, hitting a 6-for-10. Doing pretty well. I haven't noticed to see what he's done since he went down to Memphis. A lot of angst over that move, partly because there's got to be angst over pretty much every move. But, you know, a lot of people thinking that there were other options, should have been other options than to send Garcia down. I personally think that that was really about the only move Mo could or was going to make, but what do you think?
You know, I still think the most unpopular thing, I think sending a guy like Matt Adams down just to work on his swing, I know they don't want to do it for his feelings, but, you know, Grant Garcia, he's just so valuable. He can play so many positions. He's a great pinch hitter. He can fill in here or there. I don't think he really deserved it on merit. I mean, was it the best fit? Yeah, I mean, I guess so. I mean, he's two for eight down there with an RBI down there in Memphis. So he's not really, you know, plugging away, but I'm sure he's going to come back here soon enough. I'm just a guy, I don't want Aledmys Diaz to get blocked, because Aledmys Diaz has maintained his stroke. He's got some defensive things to work out, but I don't see Tejada being much more of a asset more than Diaz. And I think the way they had an option, a guy who was hitting well in Garcia, you know, it kind of shook things up. I mean, it's one of those things where you can't really win. I know they're not going to option Matt Adams, but, you know, somebody even said you could carry one less pitcher and option Seth Maness. But, you know, we all know that's not going to happen, because that's just Mike Matheny's boy. But, you know, and I know Adams needs swings to get right, but I just don't think he's going to find them here. I know he's starting a little bit more. I mean, he's cleaning up, which is, you know, not really good for anybody. But, you know, I just think for a guy who's trying to find his swing, didn't find it in the spring because he didn't play enough, and may not find it again here, but he's also trying to build up some imaginary trade value. I think that would have been more of a bold move than one I wouldn't expect. But, you know, I just hope Greg Garcia is back, and I hope Diaz doesn't get blocked, because I think those two guys are a part of this team moving forward. I think Tejada is a player that they got because they weren't sure what they had in Diaz. And, you know, once Diaz started to hit, you know, the kid's been hitting since August 1st. I mean, I wrote an article that I just posted this evening about it. You know, he's really been hitting since August 1st. He was optioned on July 8th last year. Had an okay July, Aledmys Diaz, but then he really responded in August with Springfield and Memphis. He had a good Arizona Fall League. He's just really showing. He's got a great bat. You know, just, you know, the other day against the Cubs, last game, he had a big double. He's got six doubles. I just don't want to see him sit the bench too much, because I think he has to learn, but he has to learn by playing. He has to get out there and play defense. It's one of those situations where you want to see Matheny go, hey, I have faith in you. I want to get you out there. You know, you could be a big part of this team's future. So you don't want to see him sit too much. I know Tejada has to get a couple starts just to go, hey, we're paying this guy $1.5 million. We can't just sit him on the bench. But I just hope he doesn't block Aledmys, and I hope Greg Garcia gets back here, because I think Greg Garcia gives this team a major tool. I mean, Garcia, when I look at him, I think of like Descalzo in his heyday, a guy who could just play at multiple positions, come off the bench and give you a good at bat, get a hit. So I think he's very valuable to this team, and I don't think he could have been sent down, but I'm kind of with you. I understand that was the move, because they wouldn't do Adams that way, even though he halfway deserved it.
Well, on the flip side, Matt Adams, over his last six games, which, granted, is before, you know, it's kind of an arbitrary spot, but, you know,
yeah, but, you know, you got to go off it.
Hit .385 with an OPS of almost 1.2, you know, two doubles and a homer. You know, I know that people are complaining a little bit about him, you know, hitting and hitting cleanup, but right now, if nothing else, he seems to be on whatever kind of hot streak that he can be on. And, you know, Brandon Moss is not hitting this. I don't, you know, not looking at his numbers right now. I know overall for the year, he's not hitting as well.
Yeah, he doesn't have a great average, but he's got the power.
He definitely has more homers.
Yeah, he has the power. And I just think that what we both thought for so long is that these guys are so similar. They're both lefty power hitters. I mean, Moss has done a little bit better in his career against lefties. Adams can't touch him. And with Adams, it's just, you know, you look at a guy who lost a lot of last year to the quad injury. You know, he came back, but he wasn't really, you know, kind of like Holiday was. He was kind of like probably a portion of what he could really do when he came back. In 2014, you look back to that season, and he kind of lost his power midway. You just think, you know, it's kind of the thing within in a different context, but like with Diaz and Tejada, you know, who offers me more? And even though Moss might not have a great average, I still think he gives you that bat that can give you a game-changing home run. I mean, you look at tonight, Matt Adams is up with two guys on, and he struck out in the cleanup spot. I know he's done better lately, but I just, you know, he's not a cleanup guy. I think we all know that. And I just think that I think his value has been topped out, and now we're just trying to get it back to half of that. But the problem is he has to start. He has to start somewhere. I would prefer Moss, so I think Moss just gives you more right now, but I know that they're going to give Adams as much of a shot as they can. I don't have much faith in Adams myself.
Well, and that's fair. I feel like I have a little bit more than that on Adams because I know mm-hmm. he's done some stuff in the past. Now, he struggled through the second half last year or 2 years ago, and obviously last year was kind of a wasted year because of the injury. But I still think he's young and he's still got a chance to show a little bit more than he has. Now, you know, again, between him and Moss, it's difficult to know which way to go there. You could go kind of either way. But Adams is fairly good around the base too. I mean, he does bring you some defense that, you know, I think Moss is probably pretty good over there too, but we're just going to have to wait and see. And it's, again, it may be a situation where, you know, Adams plays well enough that, you know, when it does come to roster decision, then he is able to be moved. Now, the other side of the thing was, if you demoted Adams, you're going to have four middle infielders sitting on this team, and that's not necessarily conducive for a whole lot of offense as well. I mean, you would have had Diaz and Wong and Jerko and Tejada, and for me, I mean, and we've talked about this roster not being constructed necessarily as smoothly as we would like, but that's a lot of middle infield types, especially when you could move Matt Carpenter to second if you had to. Of course, you know, I still don't know who plays third if Matt Carpenter doesn't play. I don't know if, I guess Jerko plays over there.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, he would, or, you know, you almost, I mean, you're thinking like, you think like down the road with next year, I mean, that could be, you might see, depending on what happens, you might see Johnny Peralta at third base next year for some reason. But, I mean, I think the offense was just kind of given a big shake when Matt Holliday started playing first base, kind of pushed the competition over there, even with Piscotty moving to the outfield. And then he lost Peralta, and everything just kind of got shooken up. So, you know, I think this offense is one that can produce, as we saw, at a high level. And it just has to get back to that point where Tommy Pham's maybe coming back here. And then you got Peralta the next month. So I think it's just going to be, you know, whoever plays the best. I think if Diaz keeps hitting, I think he should play. And, you know, as you saw with Hazel Baker, his bat, 2-for-20 lately, got kind of not getting his starts cut down a little bit, you know, which is right. But if Diaz keeps hitting, I just hope he gets the majority of the playing time. And I think that Garcia will find his way up here. And with Adams, you know, if he gets to play, you just hope he makes the best of it. Because, you know, he gives you better defense than Moss. He doesn't have the power. But, you know, you don't know what you have with Adams because he's had these different years. He had the first year where he hit 17 home runs and less than 300 bats. And then his power went down the next year. Then he was hurt. So you just don't know what you're going to get with Adams. And it's just not too promising. But if the team's going to give him a shot, especially hitting in a role where it's just RBI heaven, you hope he makes the best of it.
Yeah. You do, and we'll see if he can. Again, so much of the, I think for so many of these guys, it is needing to get into rhythm, needing to see pitches, needing to have at-bats, and that becomes difficult when you've got number of people that need to do that. So I still feel pretty good about Diaz starting most of the time. I'm like you, I'm with you, definitely. He needs to start over Tejada most of the time. I understand, since Tejada's come up, I guess they've split. It's been two starts for each one of them now, with Tejada starting tonight. I get that a little bit because Tejada still needs a little bit of rhythm. He only had 9 minor league at-bats coming off of that injury. So I get that a little bit, but you're right. I don't want to see that too much going forward. And it's Mike Matheny. I mean, you don't ever know for sure what you're going to get when it comes to lineups.
You know, and you know, as much as I – it's funny, you know, you take your daily measuring – how much should I defend Mike Matheny a day, Stick? And some days you don't have a lot of slack because he does stuff like you know, he isn't going to – like, if he doesn't play Diaz tomorrow, then you go, okay, I really can't defend the guy. And you want to defend him because you defended him all along, and if you don't defend Mike Matheny and you have in the past, they're just going to go, well, now you're just coming over to the dark side, finally. And it's just hard because he does stuff as far as, like, if he – let's say he continues to use Seth Maness and he keeps getting hit. You go, no, don't do that. I can't defend you there. I feel like sometimes if you're, like, Matheny's apologist, even for a guy who with the record as a manager that he's got – you still have to be, as every manager in the major league knows, if you're an apologist, you feel like you're wearing a bulletproof vest and you're a lawyer. And you just got to go, Mike Matheny, I don't have a case today. You cannot make this move. And when I see Tejada in the lineup, I know, I guess somebody told me he has a good average off Cashner. I hope that comes true. I don't know. He's 0 for 1 tonight. You just hope that, yeah, you don't see, as long as Diaz can hit, you don't. You hope you don't see Tejada out there over him. But it's not good to say, hey, rookie, you know, you've hit 385. Diaz has had one game where he started and he hasn't gotten a hit. I mean, that just needs to stay on the field, even with his defense, which I think will get better the more he plays and the more confidence he gets. As we've seen with a guy like Colton Wong, the more confidence, the better overall. And with Hazelbaker, it's like a comparison. Hazelbaker stopped hitting, so he, you know, he stopped starting. And then it opens up an opportunity for somebody else like Matt Adams to play first base and Holiday to go out and play left. Because, you know, when Hazelbaker was hitting, Holiday was at first. So you kind of see that shift, and now Grichik's kind of become more of a patient hitter. So you just see all these things happen around the lineup, and you just go, okay, I just hope you guys can somehow score some runs. I mean, you got Adams here, there. You got this guy not sitting, not playing. You got Garcia, you know, having a big day on against the Brewers, and I think he was – or against the Reds, and he was sent out. Hey, good game. See you later. Enjoy the I-55 bus down there. Good Memphis food. But, yeah, I mean, the with Adams, I think we'll agree that if he gets this shot, if he plays over Moss and if Tejada plays over Diaz, they better collect some hits.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely going to have to do a lot of that because – if you'd all want to have people having some sanity, they're going to have to do that. So,
may I point out that how many Andrew Cashner just got a hit off Adam Wainwright? How many? There's got to be a stat. How many opposing pitchers have gotten singles off our Cardinal pitching staff? It's got to be at least 4 or 5 already.
Well, and that's an interesting thing, because I know last year I noted the same thing. It seemed like so often the Cardinals were giving up
hits. Cashner just got a base hit. I mean, it could have been like I didn't see it. It was like a bunt ground ball, but still.
You
got John Lackey getting a hit. You got Hamill getting a hit, and they're both like back-breaking. And you just go, okay, guys, you know, rehab begins with striking out your counterpart.
I don't know. I mean, I agree with that. I mean, it is kind of weird, and it may not be any more than anybody else. But like I said, I noticed it last year, and you're right. This week, I mean, that's 3 out of 4 games the starter so far now has gotten a hit. Now, when it says bunt ground ball, sounds like
he barely
hit it.
Yeah.
And Wainwright maybe probably fumbled it when he tried to pick it up. I'm like you looking at game day here.
Yeah, me too. I'm like, does that mean it went like, you know, 20 feet? Yeah. Does that mean it just kind of crawled down the first base line?
Just enough. So, but still, it is. I mean, you know, is it an approach thing? Is it a, you know, just a statistical fluke? It may just be, but it seems like, you know, I don't know. Maybe they're not necessarily going after the pitchers as hard as they could, you know, thinking that that's a fairly easy out. I don't know.
Yeah,
again, this
one
seems more of a fluke, but Hamill was a big one.
Yeah, no strikeouts the first time through the order. I'm just kind of looking at that. I mean, usually you see Wainwright collect a couple, you know.
Well,
and he's got, I don't know.
And it was 8 for the year. You know, and out of 3 starts, he's not striking out people. I mean, granted, he's not going as
no
deep
out.
In he's not going as deep into games as he has.
Yeah, he's not, because usually, you know, he's in command. He gets about – I know he's not going to have, like, his 10 to 12 strikeout days, but usually, you know, he collects 6 to 8, you know. He has almost 3 times as many strikeouts as he has walks. And like you pointed out earlier, that's not even close to true this year.
Yeah, and I mean, he's gone. I'm trying to pull this up. Yeah, he's decreased basically. He went 6 innings in his first start, 5 innings in the second start, 5 and a third in the third start. And those are not, I mean, partly, you know, he's getting yanked because he's giving up a lot of runs. I mean, he's given up 12 runs in his last two starts. Partly it's because his pitch count is high. And that's another thing you haven't seen out of Wainwright. You can see Wainwright throw 100 and something pitches in a complete game. And now he's having trouble getting through five. Now, some of that's the walk. Some of that's because everybody's beating up on him. But it is disturbing to see. And I know until he puts together two or three good starts and we can start saying Adam Wainwright's back, then we're going to have these concerns every time we go out. I mean, you know, it's just a little bit, we're not used to that. And obviously everybody eventually has that problem. I mean, sometime in the not so distant future, but a few years from now, Clayton Kershaw is going to be a guy that's going to go out there and not be able to get everybody out all of a sudden. You know? It happens. Age and things like that happen to pitchers everywhere, but you don't usually, not always do they, especially the great ones, drop off a cliff. And so you don't think a Wainwright's really going to do this badly all year long, but it's still distressing. As you know, he's given up, as we see this on game day, giving up some more runs now. It's pretty much getting us to that point where, you know, we had said earlier in the show, 3 runs in 6 or 7 innings tonight, and any more than that, it's a troublesome start. We're getting really close to that troublesome start.
Yeah, we are. I mean, and it's against, you know, the Padres, and it's against a team that you should really be owning, and you're just not seeing it. You're not seeing the velocity do much. You're not seeing, you know, the curveball doesn't have what it used to be. You know, hitters aren't really just kind of swayed by it or just like fooled by it. So you're seeing a lot more runs. And granted, you know, you got, you know, singles off of Adams, and you got a sack fly, but there's still runs. I mean, here we are in the bottom of the third, and you know, he doesn't have a strikeout. He's allowed 2 runs on 4 hits. So I don't know. It's just it's you don't want to draw conclusions yet because it is early. But here we are in the fourth start, and if he gives up, as I said earlier, if he gives up more than 3 earned runs against another bad team, that'd be 3 in a row, and that's got to be some legit concern.
You look at this, and he's thrown, I'm trying to look, 10 pitches now. He got Kemp to fly out on his first one. 10 pitches this inning, and only one of them is cracked 90. And I know that, you know, some of that's different things, but he's throwing cutters and sinkers. The one was a sinker. But you're right, the velocity may not be there, and that's not what you want to see either. Now, again, looks like he's probably going to get out of this. It's 2 outs, runner on first, so hopefully it's not as bad as we thought. But again, 2 runs and 3 innings against a Padres team that nobody thinks as a
that didn't score for like, yeah, didn't score for like, what, 3 games to start the season?
I just, if he goes 8 and he gives up 2 runs, okay, fine. But, yeah, you know, like we say, he's probably, he's at 4, he's at, what'd you say was that pitching-wise?
He's 38 pitches right now.
38 pitches already. Yeah, 40, and probably not going 8 innings. Unless he gets it settled in pretty quickly.
Yeah, but right now you're looking at hopefully just him going through 6 and allowing 3 or less. Well, hopefully. That's like your hope, when that should be like – it used to be like your minimum that Wainwright to do it. And that's where you had the first game, and now he's just having trouble. I mean, he's not getting clubbed, but I see a lot of these outs in the first 3 innings are line drive outs. I mean, I once again, I'm not seeing these. I'm just going off sometimes – game day will think like a little bloop is a liner, so I haven't seen these, but just as far as what they're saying, there's been at least 3 line outs, and you have like this run. I mean, John Jay got a hit. Okay, I mean, I shouldn't say that, but you know, you got a home run in the first, and then you got this run in the third. Now, you hope the Cardinals can go, hey, we got this. But this is more kind of isolating what Adam Wainwright's doing. He's got 40 pitches, 25 to 15 strikes to balls. He hasn't struck anybody out. You know, he's not getting ahead of a lot of hitters. He's 2-2 on Upton right now. You know, he was down 3-1 in one count. He's just not getting ahead. He's not, like, baffling these hitters anymore. The hitters are kind of treating him like he's kind of like a 3 or 4 guy. And that's not what we're used to. And you're kind of starting to think, okay, is he just going to come out of this? Or is this, like, the new Wainwright?
Yeah. Hopefully, like I said, it's hopefully a little bit of overreaction on all of our parts, but it is
yeah.
a still bit.
It's like disturbing. It's like if you just imagine if when Pujols had stayed in St. Louis in 1 year, he wasn't a god anymore. Like, yeah, he wasn't destroying the baseball anymore.
Like the next year?
Yeah.
The first year he left?
I mean, but just imagine if he had signed that big contract and he comes back and he just fly ball, ground ball. Why are you chasing that? You never chased it before. It's shocking when these guys start to become more human.
Definitely. Definitely so. All right,
imagine if Chris Carpenter had stuck around for a few more years and his arm couldn't handle it, and he just started to become very, very human. When Isringhausen had these great seasons, and all of a sudden when his hit gave out, he was just so hittable, and he couldn't throw his curveball, and his fastball didn't cut. I mean, he couldn't cut his fastball. Like, who is this guy? This is not the Isringhausen we know, but it happened really quickly.
Yeah, and it happens. It happens, but hopefully not so much for Wainwright. All right, we had a couple of questions on the Twitter today.
We did.
Let's go ahead and answer or at least talk about them. Well, one of them comes from our friend Derek Dockett, who is on the Twitter at ddockett, asking if the who the catcher of the future is for the Cardinals and if that person is in the organization. The minors are not necessarily my thing. I know some names, but that's about it. But kind of glancing through and knowing what I know, I really don't think that catcher's there. I know that there's some love for Carson Kelly, but I just have problems believing he's going to be able to hit enough to actually make it up to the big leagues.
You know, I think I have more faith in Carson Kelly. I mean, I'm not ready to push all my chips in the middle and go, this guy's the guy. But I like that he hit, and then he adjusted, and he won a gold glove. And I know it was Palm Beach, but he won a gold glove. He's got the defense down. We all know Molina came up in the major leagues, and he couldn't hit that much. And it'd be nice to see Kelly improve this year at Springfield. I'm probably going to go watch him this weekend at he's playing against the Arkansas Travelers, so hopefully I get a chance to see him and Mr. Harrison Bader, who I'm really excited to go see. But I think if there is one guy, I mean, Mike Oldman can hit. I don't know if they're – I mean, he's also – they're both – you know, I think Oldman's 25 and Kelly is only 21. I know Kelly's really young, so I know he's got a lot of time. And I think if you're a catcher and you're going to get one thing down pat, the defense, because the Cardinals really favor that in a catcher. So I think if he adjusted and won a gold glove, and if he can just get back to the bat and hit at least, you know, show some pop in that bat. Because I know once upon a time he hit, and then he adjusted to his defense. So if there is a guy, I think I'm looking more, even though I like Oldman a lot, and I think Oldman, I just don't know if he's ever going to be the guy. I think Oldman could be a backup somewhere. I do think that Kelly is the closest we have. Is he going to be it? I don't know, but I think I liked it the way he adjusted and won a gold glove. If he hits well at Springfield, he gets to Memphis. If he shows some improvement with his bat this year, you kind of start to get really excited. But I think he's got the defensive tools to play in the major leagues. But like you said, is he going to be a guy who comes up here and hits 220? Is he going to be a guy that can adjust like Yachty over the first few years and kind of become a good hitter? If there is a guy in this system right now, it's Carson Kelly. Is it a lockdown for sure? No. I mean, it's just not that. But I do think Carson Kelly is closer. I've kind of gotten more into the minors. I've tried to be more, reading, the minor league stats and seeing how they're doing and watching some more minor league ball down here in Arkansas. I've kind of gotten to know the double A team a little bit more, the triple A team. I'm doing, my best to not be like the opposite of John Nagel. I'm trying to be not terrible with the minor leagues. But, I mean, he's excited about him, and he's kind of excited about him. That kind of makes me a little excited about Carson Kelly. And I just like what he can do, and I like the way that he adjusted it. He said, okay, I'm going to work on my defense. I worked on my defense, and now – I'm going to get back to this hitting thing, because he said it at the winter warm-up that he really just said he put his batting on the back burner and really focused on his defense. Now you want to see him get back to hitting, because if he can just hit a little bit, You know, if you're a defensive-minded catcher, that's great. The Cardinals need that. But is there a lockdown for sure? No. But is there a close enough? I think Carson Kelly is a guy that Cardinal fans can get excited about because he's really so young and he's already a double A.
True. But, you know, I look, and again, I haven't seen, and so you look at the stat lines and they don't tell you everything, but he hit 219 at single A, at, you know, at A ball advanced at Palm Beach last year. They moved him up to Springfield mainly based on his glove. And right now, 10 games in, not much, but 10 games in, he's hitting 184. It just makes me feel, I mean, he's only 21, I think is what it says. So maybe turning 22 later this summer. So he's got some time to try to develop that bat. He's going to have to do quite a bit. I mean, we're looking 2-3 years at least before and he'd have to really do some work there to get in. Now, I think Ullman can make it up to the major leagues, but I don't see that Ullman is a guy that's going to be a Cardinal catcher for 2-4 years in a row.
Yeah, I just think that he's going to be more of a guy that can maybe be a backup, maybe, you know, maybe back up, maybe even somewhere else. He comes up here, you know, I'm intrigued by his bat. I almost wish he could make a hybrid of Mike Ullman and Carson Kelly. And I think that'd be the greatest catcher of all, the greatest prospect of all time. You'd have Ullman's bat and Kelly's defense. But, yeah, I mean, I know there's a little bit of a concern about his bat. This is a big year for Carson Kelly, because if he doesn't hit this year, then you start to go, okay, so what is his ceiling? And I still think with how young he is and how, you know, he's going to face some pitchers that, you know, you're going to have to do good against in order to show that you can play at the major league level. I think these are big years. Like this year, next year are big years. And you also hope that, you know, Yadier Molina can be your catcher at least the next 2 years, this year, next year, and with Brian Peña here too. So these guys got time. So I wouldn't, if he's trying to say, is there a lockdown prospect? No, I don't think there's anybody like a pitching wise. You look at, you know, Alex Reyes, you go, that guy's going to pitch in the major leagues by the end of this season or next season for sure. That's a for sure prospect. Not like, you know, Austin Gomer or Luke Weaver, who are still a little bit away. You need to see him face some other hitters. So with Carson Kelly, it's a great transition he made in winning that Gold Glove and becoming a defensive-prone-minded catcher, but he needs to hit a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, I could easily see Kelly repeating Double-A next year. And even if he repeats Double-A next year, that puts him at, you know, 23 when he's done with that. He goes up to Memphis maybe for a year. That puts him at, you know, maybe 24 by the time he gets a cup of coffee in September of 18. You know, but again, he's going to have to show something with the bat. And so far, we haven't seen that. But again, I know a lot of people are high on him. There's, you know, perhaps some reason to think that. You know, you look at his historically has not hit that well. Had a good bit at the short A ball in the New York Penn League up there, but for the most part has not done a whole lot in the minor leagues with his bat. So we have to wonder if he can, but there's still some time for him to develop. So I get, you know, he's probably the only one, like say you look at, you go down a level and there's Steve Bean, who's hitting a little bit more, but you know, he's already 22 and he's a level below Carson Kelly. Doesn't, you know, bode a whole lot of there. And I mean, he's hitting well this year, but he hasn't hit in the past as well. Seems like he's probably not going to be the guy that's going to pass him. So, we'll see. I mean, it may be that the Cardinals have to go out and get a catcher. It may be that Carson Kelly is the guy, but that's, if he's in the organization, it's probably Kelly. We'll see how they draft this year as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and this year, you know, he's not off to a great start. I don't know if you went over his stats with Springfield, but he's got 10 strikeouts. He's what, 8-for-41? So he's not really having a great start. You hope he can bring it up. But yeah, I mean, Carson Kelly could be a guy. He could end up being a backup, or he could end up being your starter if he learns to hit more. So I would say if Derek's is there a for sure fire, you know, number one guy right now, I would say no, because we need to see what Carson Kelly can do as he rises. I mean, he's going to turn 22 on July 14th. So that's, and he's going to play probably this whole season. I mean, I think Mike Ullman's going to get a lot of the Memphis at bats. I mean, I think you're going to see Carson Kelly get a lot of, I mean, get Springfield for most of this year, unless he just kind of starts just freaking out with the baseball bat. But, you know, it's a big year for him. Because if he goes, if he hits like he did last year in advanced day, if he still hits another 219, then you got to say, okay, well, if he goes up to Memphis, he isn't going to hit any better. You know, you kind of start to see his ceiling as he gets to be like, you know, 23, you know, 24, and then again, he kind of gets old for a prospect. So he's young. I think this is a really big year. I would say ask us that question at the end of the season. It'll be a better answer.
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll have to see. That's true, but I doubt our answer is much different than Carson Kelly, if there is one, unless, you know, unless I make some sort of strange trade that brings in a catching prospect, but that doesn't seem likely. Now, the other question I got, and I don't know if you saw it or not, it comes from Sean. From his handle is 2x08, or 07, sorry. Sean's a good Twitter follow. Asking which Cardinal, hang on, I gotta read this out because I gotta know it right. Which Cardinal owns and uses a Miracle Grill mat? Now, I had to go and Google what a Miracle Grill mat was. Apparently, there was a commercial for that, an infomercial as part of the Blues game last night, mainly because it was probably airing after midnight. Seems to be one of those things you put on a grill to make sure your stuff isn't get stick and all that kind of stuff, which, you know, again, probably a little bit overkill, as he points out. He uses PAM and aluminum foil. Our friend Kevin Reynolds, also aluminum foil man, probably not necessary. But, you know, when you're a million-dollar baseball player, you can afford to spend $19.99 on a Miracle Grill mat. So if I was to guess, it kind of sounds like a holiday thing to me, maybe. You know, first you got to pick a mat, don't you, for this type of thing?
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, it's holiday, seems like a guy, he might be out grilling, but not really want to mess with anything else. You know, I don't know. What do you think?
I think I can see Matt Holliday a lot of grilled chickens, and I think that's all Matt Holliday eats because he's basically like superhuman. I almost kind of think of you know, Lance Lynn as a barbecuing guy. I think Lance Lynn, you know, he's out there, he can't do much. You know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna really up my barbecue game. I'm gonna try to challenge Adam Wainwright for this barbecue, you know, extraordinaire. You know, was I think these starting pitchers are always kind of, you know, competing with each other, even off the field. I mean, I think when it comes to who gets the better parking spot, who gets the, you know, who gets to the clubhouse first, when it comes to Lance Lynn, you know what, I'm going to use my downtime to become a better barbecue guy and really just get the mat, get everything. I think I could see Lance Lynn carrying, like, have three grills laid out in his backyard, grilling three different things just to be, if I can't pitch this year, I'm going to be the best darn grill. I'm going to throw my best fastball when it comes to barbecuing.
Very possible. We saw what Wainwright did when he was out, so that's very...
Yeah, I'm telling you, man.
Take a quick look at, you know, we're getting to an
yeah,
hour.
Mr. Yeah, Mr. Grichuk hit a home run. That was kind of nice.
So that's good. Cardinals have this series with the Padres this weekend, and they have four with Arizona next week. I have no idea when we'll record next week. We'll talk about that later. So it's a week that the Cardinals really, and we've kind of talked about this, this is a series, a road trip that they really need to do well on. And, I mean, West Coast road trips are a little bit difficult to get your body adjusted to the times. And you know, you go to Arizona, and it's, again, off a little bit. Arizona's a ballpark that the ball tends to fly in. A lot of different things. But, you know, the Cardinals have to beat these teams, I think, to be competitive. I think it's kind of what we've talked about before. We've got to hope for a good week here.
Yeah, I mean, you think about the Cardinals, you know, you go into May, and you know, after you face these two teams, you face Washington, you face the Phillies for four, you get to kind of, and then you get the Pirates, and then you get the Angels, and the Dodgers, and the Rockies, and then you get, you know, like I said, you get the Pirates, the 6th, 7th, and 8th, and then you get the Cubs. So you got those two watermark series. You got those two series where you're going to be measuring yourself against them to see how well you can do in your second time. You know, you're going to get them both. You're going to get the Cubs at home again. So you still have – it's going to be almost the exact same series, a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So, you know, you want to beat these bad teams, but you have to show that when you face the Nationals and you face the Pirates again – and of course, when you go on the road into Chavez Ravine to face the Dodgers, and then you got the Cubs, you want to be able to just pick up series wins, and then you got to play better against these good teams. Because if you can't beat these two teams, this is going to be a very long season for the Cardinals.
Yeah, very. We don't want that.
No, we don't. And that's why I said, you know, the second series against these guys is huge. You know, you get beat up, lose 5 out of 6, you don't score. But when you face them again, you know, hopefully you know who your starters are by May, especially towards the end of May. You know, you hope you know who's going to be going out there. You know who you can trust. You know, if Seth Maness is pitching bad, you hope he's not on the team by then. And Matt Adams kind of has another rough streak. If Hazelbaker, you know, you might see Pham back on the team. You're probably going to be looking at Peralta after that Cubs series. So, you know, you just have to do better against these teams. I mean, it should be a battle that goes back and forth all year long. It should be a boxing match that kind of has rounds going to each side. But, if they face these teams again and they get knocked out, that's 2 series in a row, and that doesn't make anybody feel happy. Even if you go and you beat the Diamondbacks and you beat the Padres, you beat the Phillies, you have to beat the teams that are going to be standing in front of your way, not just for the division, but for the playoff entry. Because these three teams may find themselves in the Central Division battle and also the wild card battle.
Looking on Twitter, I see that tonight seems to have been, and I haven't obviously haven't listened, but it seems to have been Jim Edmonds' debut in the booth.
Oh, yeah. Oh, really? Yeah. I haven't listened to it, but yeah. I know the...
We heard tonight also, heard today, that Pat Parris is moving on out to Arizona. It's going to be kind of interesting, as somebody's pointed out, I think it's Chase Woodruff from Double Birds, has pointed out, you know, there's a whole lot of the people that look alike in the Fox Sports Midwest studios and on the field. I mean, you know, we got a bunch of white guys. It'll be interesting to see if they go a different route with the host of the pre and post game show and what they're going to do there. Obviously, we've been used to, I think Pat Parris has been here for 15 years, if I'm right. It's kind of been adjusted to him and Jimmy Hayes to be that guy. So bringing in a new face is good. It's going to be kind of interesting.
It is. I mean, as I said today about Pat Parris, he's kind of synonymous when it comes to the opening and the closing of Fox Sports Midwest. He's just the first face you see every night in the pregame, and he's the last face you see. And it's going to be a big transition for the network because, you know, Jim Hayes does the radio show with Inside STL. I don't know that he can really take on that full commitment. I know they have this Scott Wehrman is his name, the guy that kind of fills in. So he might maybe – I don't think he's really that compelling. I mean, I don't really want to see more of him. I think he's more of a fill-in guy for the Blues and the Cardinals. But, I mean, yeah, I mean, I think this is a chance for you to maybe go out and get somebody that's maybe even a different flavor, a different, more energy. I mean, you know, Pat Parris is kind of like a guy that I could see existing on Mad Men. He's very classy, very good. It's going to be really – I think the story of what he's doing, though, going to you know, where his dad worked at his ABC affiliate in Tucson is just great. It, you know, it makes a guy like me who is kind of transplanted from his home for a work kind of thing with his family. So I get that he wants to go home, and that's great. I mean, you know, if you had a chance to go back to the station where your dad worked for 30 years, you can't say no. But I think this next step, as you said, is going to be interesting because I know Jim Hayes can't really make that transition unless he cuts off some of his radio work. So it's going to be somebody from the outside. But I don't think Scott's going to be more kind of a backup guy. And, yeah, I mean, they can go in a different direction and kind of spruce it up a little bit, along with hiring somebody maybe hopefully new for their Twitter handle. I'm just kidding.
I see. I mean,
do a double hire.
Well, Wehrman, I believe, has got, you know, KMOX responsibility.
Yeah, yeah.
So it does seem to be that they could bring somebody new in. We need to make sure maybe Tara Wellman needs to go put her resume
in. I'm telling you, Tara, you go with a fierce female voice. That could be a great way to do it. Yeah. And Tara, I'm sure she wouldn't turn it down. I'm sure she would. I think she would go, "Who's pranking me?" I think she would think that you or I or Matt Whitner were just kind of having a voice recorder of, like, you know, FSM's boss and going, "This is well, but we want you to." But I think she'd be great. I think just from watching the bird seeds, I think she should submit the bird seeds videos right now to somebody at Fox Sports Midwest and get it on. I think we should start a campaign. That's it. I think we should do it.
That's right.
It may not, and it's not going to be successful, but if we can take over Twitter with our – with the Rue Court thing, I think we can try to get Tara some steam behind this anchor business. I think you're right. I think when you say different, I think of just a very fierce female voice. There's so many female fans out there, and they want to. And if they saw a female voice that knew what she was talking about, knew condition as good as the guys, and really just kind of give it something new. I mean, you don't see that a lot on like pregame. You don't see a lot of females in there, and that's not right. We need to get Tara in there. That's it.
Yeah, I mean, I have seen on some of the other Fox
sports. Oh, you have? Okay.
Well, it seems to me, not always, because there are some that have them in the studio, but a lot of times they'd almost be doing what Jim Hayes does for Fox Sports West, you know, doing the interviews before the game and things of that nature. It would be kind of interesting to see somebody, you know, a woman being in charge of the pre- and post-game show instead of just being the sideline reporter, if you will.
Yeah.
I don't know, and I have no idea what they're going to do. It would seem unlikely that they'll go that way, because I'm sure that they probably think the audience is accustomed to a certain style, and they may not want to shake the boat. But, you know, it's Fox Sports Midwest. They ought to realize it's Cardinal baseball, and then everybody's going to watch it. You know, I mean, it doesn't really matter who you put out there, because we've proven people will watch Al. And they will watch a game with Al and Ricky. They may watch it with it muted, but they're still watching it.
They're still watching it.
So, you know, you really can't screw it up. And so it's worth maybe taking a little bit of a risk on some things like that. We've gone long. So let's go ahead and Adam Wainwright, of course, giving up another run. Made it 3-1. But, you know, he's in the fifth. Well, he's gone through four, so that let me. I'm not. I'll retract.
It's a big. Yeah, I mean, this is a big. Though, I mean, if he can get the third time through the order, is going to be the real test for Wainwright. If he can get through him and be smooth and give up, like I said, 3-6, that's an improvement off your last two starts. But if he gets hammered for one more, or two more, it just kind of gets like a no more downhill.
Yeah, three runs though, and even in Petco, it makes you get a little bit. Little bit concerned.
So. Yikes.
Anyway, let's go ahead and shift over to whatever entertainment news you want to bring to us today. What you got?
Well, I'll tell you what. I didn't get out to see a movie this week, but I'll tell you what. For people that like, and if you follow me, you've been immune to it, is that, you know, I think you should give the Cinemax show Banshee a shot. It just came. The first season's on Amazon. It's a series that I swear it's as good. It's a cinematic TV series. It's got action. It's got all kinds of drama, you know, suspense. It goes in a lot of different directions. Not for the kids. So if you're parents, you know, put the kids to bed, watch a couple hours. But the first season's on Amazon. It's on iTunes. It's just a really good series. I mean, I've gotten to know the cast and the crew. Cinemax wasn't really known for original series before Banshee really got there, and they kind of put them on the map. You know, it's a story about, to put it really quickly, it's, you know, a guy gets out of jail. He spent 15 years in jail for a jewel heist. He goes to this town called Banshee to track down the woman he loved, and she's remarried. There's gangsters. He kind of becomes the sheriff, and then everything just kind of goes bad. It goes in so many different directions, and I always tell everybody who actually takes my advice and watches it, they go, man, this is so good. Why didn't I watch it before? That's because you just didn't follow and know me. Now you do. But, you know, it's a series that it's wild. It's crazy. I mean, if you don't like a lot of action and a lot of, well, just say some, you know, sexy time. Anyway, and a series that goes in extremes. It's even the cast calls it kind of a heightened reality. But it's a series that you haven't seen anything like it before. This can kind of concoction. And it's I always tell people, if you don't want to go out to the movies on a Friday night, you can stay in. Banshee is every Friday night. It's in its last season, so it's going to have a total of 38 episodes. It's not like I'm going to have you watch, like, you know, Game of Thrones, which is like, you know, 60, and Breaking Bad's got 72 episodes. I always just say, you know, you want me to catch up on a series, but how many episodes do I have to watch? Well, at Banshee, it's only like, you know, 33. And in this series, you'll just fly through it. I mean, if you like it. If you don't like it, it'll be much, but I always tell people, they go, why do you tweet about so much? Well, it's really good, and you can't say I'm wrong for tweeting about it until you watch it and say it's good or bad. So if you don't want to go out to the movies and pay the babysitter and pay the $25, $30 for a movie you may not like and eat all that popcorn that sounds good, but it's really not good for your colon. I know I've tried it 1,000 times. Always a bad idea. Like, man, it looks so good, and it goes in and digests it, and you're like, oh. Stay inside, put the kids down, and watch Banshee. It's on Amazon now. The first pilot is on YouTube, actually, so you can kind of just give it a look. It's a great series, and it's a series I'm going to endorse even when it's done. It's a series that really kind of became my favorite, and I watch a lot of television, so take my word for it.
I have it in 2 weeks still till Civil War, so we'll.
Oh gosh, Civil War!
Talk about there.
That's gonna need its own podcast, Chop. I mean, that's gonna be like an extra an hour and 20 minutes of baseball, then an epic 30-minute breakdown. So that might have to be its own special podcast.
I don't know. We didn't have a special one for Force Awakens, so we might be.
We might be able to
just tack it in there. We'll have to see. So. All right. Well, for Mr. Buffa, I'm Daniel Shoptaw. We will try this again next week and see if we can get it right. So until then, night.
My name is Daniel Shoptaw, an Arkansas accountant with a love for the Cardinals. I spent a lot of years watching the game before deciding to write about it. Now I express my thoughts and opinions at C70 at the Bat, part of the Cardinal Conclave. His name is Dan Buffa, a former Busch Stadium scoreboard operator with a passion for the game. His writing talents can be found throughout the internet on a variety of topics, including movies and anything St. Louis. You'll find him often bleeding out words at stlouissportsminute.com. Every week, we pool our knowledge and our opinions to create this podcast. Together, we are the best Dans in baseball. Thanks for listening to The Best Dans in Baseball. We'd love to have your feedback on the show. Email us at bestdansinbaseball@gmail.com. Dan Buffa can be found on Twitter at Buffa82, Daniel Shoptaw at C70. The show's Twitter handle is bestdan, BASEBAL1. You can also find us on Facebook under Best Dans in Baseball.